This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, crossover podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Happy All-Star season, Beck, as I tease what our subject matter will be on the podcast.
It's a happy All-Star season. It's also, of course, a stressful All-Star season because we've only got days left before we have to file our official ballots. And it's actually a little harder than I expected. I'm struggling a little bit here. I'm sure you will straighten me out in the course of this podcast.
Yeah, most certainly I can straighten you out because my picks are always right. Social media constantly agrees with me, and there's no room for dispute in any of that. Howard, I want to get to our ballots. We're going to run through the starters that we both have chosen in the Eastern and Western Conference. But real quick, there was a report on Tuesday in The Athletic that Frank Vogel, the Lakers coach, is effectively game-to-game right now. This is after the Lakers were pummeled by, 37 points by the Denver Nuggets earlier this week. They rebounded to beat the Jazz at home. That was a quality win for the Lakers. I continue to be mystified that we are going to wind up making Frank Vogel the scapegoat for the Lakers' problems. Like, if you are going to make a list of all the issues the Lakers have right now, Frank Vogel's coaching is like 47th on that list. It just is. Like, I don't think he's flawless, and you can criticize his rotations, how he's used Russell Westbrook at times, but he didn't put this team together. When he had a team that was functional, it won a championship, and it looked like he was on its way to at least a finals appearance before Anthony Davis got hurt in the first round of that series against Phoenix. So just give me a reaction to the latest reporting around Frank Vogel that suggests it seems unlikely, barring a surge in the next few weeks, that he finishes the season with the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is almost inevitable. It feels inevitable, and it's not surprising either of us. But, look, stepping back for a second, this is just the league. This is the league. This is how it goes, unfortunately. I'm not saying it's justified. I'm not saying it's rational. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have some degree of sympathy for Frank Vogel, though he gets paid very well for the trouble of being on the firing line, as all the coaches do. It comes with the territory, and every coach will tell you the cliche of we're hired to be fired. That's true. And he won't be the first, probably. I mean, I haven't looked it up, but he's certainly not going to be the first to potentially be fired within 2 years after winning a championship or 2 seasons after winning a championship.
Not a long list, though. Not a long list.
It happens. It happens. Look, you and I have discussed this. We absolutely agree. Frank Vogel is not the problem with the Lakers, and this roster construction was a disaster. The whole league knew. I feel like I'm a broken record on this one. From the moment they made the Westbrook deal, from the moment they didn't re-sign Alex Caruso, the whole league had a universal opinion on this. And this is not a league that agrees that you can find consensus that quickly, that often, on personnel moves. Yeah, trades are made, transactions happen, you call around, and you get a mix, and sometimes it's leaning one way or the other. But this was absolutely unanimous last summer, Chris. I didn't find anybody who thought, yes, great deal for Russell Westbrook. That's the perfect third star for... Nobody said that. Nobody. Nobody except the Lakers and a few true believers thought Russell Westbrook was the right fit for LeBron and Anthony Davis, and that he was worth all of the pieces that they gave up, which was essentially their entire supporting cast. So you throw on top of that trade, which everybody, as I say, knew was ill-fated or seemed ill-fated at the time, throw on top of that Anthony Davis's long absence due to injury, the COVID issues they've had, other injuries they've had. Yeah, they've been kind of a mess, but not surprising to most of us, but you and I both know this. GMs don't fire themselves. And team owners generally, when the team struggles, fire the coach first. And if the front office is going to pay a price, it's not going to be until much later. But I do think the Lakers are absolutely deluding themselves if they think that somehow firing Frank Vogel, elevating one of his assistants, whether Fizdale or somebody else, or whether bringing somebody in from the outside or whatever it is, they're fooling themselves if they think that that's going to somehow magically fix this absolute disaster of a roster that they put around LeBron and Anthony Davis.
I mean, you already got kind of a glimpse of what a David Fizdale coached Lakers team looks like. They were 1-5 when Frank was out with his own health and safety protocol issue. So you kind of know that just flipping a coach on the bench is probably not going to get it done. Bring a coach in from the outside, whether it be Mark Jackson or somebody else, doesn't make any sense, at least not right now.
No.
Transitioning midseason is just, that's like waving the white flag to me if you're going to try to make a transition midseason. Where the Lakers went wrong and why they're in this predicament is for two reasons. One, and this is before the Westbrook trade, they had the opportunity last February to go get Kyle Lowry.
Yes, they did.
They could have acquired Kyle Lowry, and it would have cost them Talen Horton-Tucker. That was the piece that the Lakers did not want to include in the deal. Now, Talen Horton-Tucker is a good player and is probably going to get better as a player, but right now, you think the Lakers would have Horton-Tucker or Kyle Lowry? Where would they be with Kyle Lowry, who is a much better fit alongside LeBron and AD than Russell Westbrook has proven to be? Then there was the Westbrook trade, which you talked about, which could have been Buddy Hield, could have been something else.
Yeah. For a lesser price.
The Lakers' problems are transactional. They are not coaching.
Well,
they are
the
decisions. Go ahead.
Let me go back even further. I agree with you on the Lowry, Talen Horton-Tucker thing. Let me go back even further. The Anthony Davis trade. They got their clocks cleaned in the negotiation.
Oh, they did. Yeah. So, I mean, Howard, they won a championship.
They
that
did.
Year, and that's kind of like, it's like, I gave them a pass on. Like, whatever you got Davis.
Everybody gives them a pass on that, and it's fine. I'm not going to argue the broad strokes of everything is justified if you win a championship. That's fine. But the reason I critiqued the trade, not criticized, but critiqued the fundamentals of that deal at the time and continue to bring it up now is they had all the leverage in the world. Anthony Davis wanted to go to exactly one place, the Lakers, and was a walk-away free agent at the end of that season, and the Lakers had all the leverage. And instead, the Pelicans extracted everything from them. Why does that matter now? Because they don't have those pieces to deal now. Because the number of players and picks they gave up means that they don't have anything else to trade. And so when everybody's asking, well, what do they do from here, aside from apparently firing their coach, Talen Horton-Tucker plus Kendrick Nunn plus picks in 2028 is not going to get you much. If they had held back at least a little bit in that Anthony Davis deal, they would have been better off either a year ago in making a deal or right now in making a deal. And yeah, we don't know if Kyle Lowry would have resigned. That's the other piece of this, right? The worry at the time was you trade for Kyle Lowry. What if he then walks to Miami in the offseason?
Yeah, I think he would have stayed. Like, Lakers would have paid him, and I think he would have stayed.
And look at how seamlessly he's fit for Miami and what a great addition he's been there. We know how tough Kyle Lowry is. We know what a great defender he is, what a great leader he is, shot maker. There's no question. Like, time and again, like, they're... I don't want to get into a whole thing where it's just like trashing the Laker front office. But aside from LeBron and Anthony Davis, which is a really, really big aside from, but everything else, the important stuff, the details that matter, they have not been very good at, to say the least.
No, they haven't. They haven't. But, you know, the coach is always the scapegoat. He's going to be the scapegoat in this situation. It's not going to make the Lakers measurably better. And, you know, just as sure as I was that the Russell Westbrook trade wouldn't work for this team, I'm equally sure that just dumping Frank Vogel and replacing him with an assistant is not going to work for this team. All right, let's talk All-Stars. And you and I are both media voters for the All-Star ballot. The fan vote returns are in. Two of the returns are in for the fan vote. Our ballots are due at the end of the week. I wrote a column about my ballot earlier on Tuesday. I want to start, Howard, with the section that I think is going to be the easiest for us, and that's Eastern Conference front court. I feel like there are kind of three clear-cut candidates right there.
Yes.
You got Joel Embiid, no-brainer at this point. He's putting up comparable numbers, tick lower, but comparable numbers to what he did last season. He's getting to the free throw line double-digit times per game. He's shooting well from the free throw line. And most importantly, he has propped up this Sixers team and put them within shouting distance of being the number one seed again. Right now, they're in like fourth or fifth in the conference, but they're still within three games of being the top seed in the conference. That's a remarkable achievement when you consider that Embiid is without his primary running buddy, that being Ben Simmons, who has, of course, sat out the entire year. I've got Kevin Durant as the other forward in the conference. That was an easy one as well. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, who continues to put up incredible numbers. He's dipped below 30% from three-point range this season, not a huge deal, especially when you consider he's gone above 70% from the free throw line, which is a far more important, I think, measurement for the Milwaukee Bucks. They want him making free throws more than they want him making threes. So I thought the first three, the front court guys in the Eastern Conference were really easy to choose from. How did you see it?
Yeah, I had, you know, I go with the no-brainers first, right? I put them in boldface so I can say, okay, these are settled. Now what do I have left? And yeah, it was basically two in the West that were absolute no-brainers and three in the East, and we'll get to the West later. So in the East, yes, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid. You know, the thing with Durant is we know he's not going to start the All-Star game, and he's not going to play because he's injured now. And look, if he had already missed a month of games, you know, in December, I probably would have just knocked him out based on not enough games played. But we're voting right now, and so just to clarify, like, we're voting on season to date, and he has absolutely played enough of the season to date. So we know he will probably be voted in by not only the fans, but by, you know, fans get 50% of the vote, media gets 25% of the vote, players get 25% of the vote. I'm sure Durant's going to make it, and then Adam Silver will replace him with somebody who gets snubbed, our favorite word of All-Star season. But yeah, I don't think there's any question in the world that Durant, Giannis, and Embiid are the absolute locks in the front court. And that's no disrespect to some of the others who have had strong seasons, but it's just not even close. Like, does Jared Allen deserve consideration for reserves? Sure. Tatum? Sure. Maybe a couple others. Jimmy Butler. But to start, nobody can beat those three guys out. There's no case for it.
Yeah. So I don't want to spend too much time on the Eastern Conference front court. There's very little debate there. I would say just a quick aside on, you know, Kevin Durant, and I'm just aiming this at Brooklyn. Could you stop Brooklyn promoting Kyrie Irving for All-Star? I know, like, marketing, that's part of your job, but when I saw that tweet pop up, you know, vote Kyrie for All-Star, he's played like four games this season. Like, what are we doing? Like, I mean, can we not, like, prop somebody else up? Like, somebody else has played, even if it's not a real candidate.
Someone's played
games for you.
We're in an era of player placating and player pandering by teams.
I mean, even
because,
Kyrie, you know, knows. I mean, Kyrie, I think Kyrie's wants to be an All-Star, thinks he's an All-Star. Yeah. I mean, come on.
And by the way, lest anybody think that it's about, you know, because of the vaccine. No. I mean, he chose not to take the vaccine, and that's why he hasn't played. But the bottom line is games played. It's no different than if he'd been out for 2 months with an ankle sprain. He hasn't played enough games. Kyrie is, like, that's what's at least simplified it this year a little bit. Kyrie is out. Ben Simmons is out of the running. So it has simplified our discussion, because these are guys who were staples, obviously, every year for most of their careers. And then Julius Randle was another one. I was just looking. I always look at last year's All-Stars. Like, does everybody deserve the benefit of the doubt to return? And Randle's had, obviously, a substandard season. So he's the other one from last year that I kind of, you know, immediately tossed aside.
All right. As you say that, it did make the backcourt selections in the conference pretty difficult. Well, at least one of them. Like, my first backcourt choice was DeMar DeRozan, who is having just a fantastic season in Chicago. And I add, like, kind of an asterisk to that, Howard, because he's putting up numbers, but they're kind of like DeRozan-esque numbers. Like, I was talking to a couple of coaches about the differences in DeRozan this year. And, you know, both of them said to me, like, he's not that much different than the guy that was down in San Antonio.
He's just on a better team.
He's on a better team.
I think he's shooting and scoring a little bit more.
Yeah. Like, they've ticked up a little bit, but it's not like there's this reinvention of DeMar DeRozan. Like, he hasn't become a 3-point shooter. He's only attempting a shade under two threes per game. 90%+ of his shots, Howard, have come from inside the arc.
So is DeRozan? Let's jump right into this. Is DeRozan definitely your first guard in the East?
So I kind of looked at this. I was like, one of these Bulls guards has to start.
I'm glad you put it that way, because that's where I'm going with this.
I picked DeRozan. It's just close. DeRozan's played, I think, a couple more games, and I mean, the numbers are comparable. And I just look at the impact. It's not just DeRozan, because they signed other guys and acquired other guys to play with Zach LaVine, but I just think the impact DeRozan has had has been measurable. And, I mean, stuck in my head, I know it's anecdotal, but, I mean, the guy made, like, back-to-back game winners
last month.
Like, I mean,
those
he's had a phenomenal first half. Like, you might switch this at the end of the season and say Zach LaMine is the team MVP or whatever you want to call it. But for the first half of the season, I shaded to DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, so in both of my guard spots, I have two guys that I'm still struggling between. And our ballots are not due till Saturday night. And so I'm just going to say that whatever I conclude on this podcast today, folks, don't hold me to. I might change my mind 17 times between now and Saturday night. I am leaning LaVine over DeRozan because I agree with you. One of the two Bulls guards has to make it. By the way, another quick aside to the aside, DeRozan technically is a forward at this stage of his career and should have been classified there. And a lot of people have noted that on Twitter in the days since these ballots went out. But the NBA decided they're both at guard and we don't have the flexibility, to my knowledge, to switch them. I don't think the website does not allow us to change that. So I think it's one or the other. I'm leaning LaVine. I did not plan it this way for debate purposes. I didn't know where you were going with it. LaVine, the argument for him is he's by far the better shooter and the more efficient scorer when you're talking 2-point range, 3-point range, effective field goal percentage, which is a combination of the two, of course. And he's the foundation of the Bulls in a lot of ways, pre-DeRozan. If DeMar DeRozan kind of put them over the top, LaVine's the reason there was something to move on from that could get them from, you know, competitive to playoff team, right? And it's a big leap they've made, but it's not just DeRozan. It's the defense that they brought in with Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso. It's all the offseason moves that this front office made, and they had a phenomenal offseason. And I don't disagree that DeRozan's his scoring, his mid-range game, certainly the two game winners you brought up, it's hard to like overlook those. There's something about him that has made the Bulls legit and feel legit in a way that they didn't before. But Zach LaVine has been the best version of himself now for the last two seasons. Much more efficient. You can knock his D, but you can knock DeRozan's D too. So right now I'm leaning LaVine. His numbers, his efficiency numbers are just a tad better there because their scoring numbers are very close. As are the rebounds and assists.
So. Yeah, I couldn't argue that. I mean, it's six and one, half dozen the other to me. I'd lean to DeRozan and LaVine the other way. Now, the second guard spot was more complicated to me. Like LaVine, certainly in consideration. I had one coach tell me that both the Bulls guards should be starters in the All-Star game. If you're going to classify DeRozan as a guard, both these guys should be starters in the game. I didn't feel quite as strongly about that argument because it is a pretty talent-rich field, as it often is. Not as talent-rich as it's been years past when Simmons and Irving were in that mix, but there's some good players in there. I looked pretty hard, obviously, at James Harden, who, you know, even though his shooting numbers have dipped this season, he's still like dangerously close to that averaging a triple-double range, and he started to figure out how to get to the free throw line again, you know, over the last month or so, which was a problem for him in the first month of the season, which had a lot to do with his early season shooting woes. Trae Young, great offensive season, no defense whatsoever, which took Trae Young out of the argument pretty quickly for me. LaMelo Ball, I thought he's had an all-star starter-worthy season. That's another one. Who am I missing? There was just a bunch of... Oh, Darius Garland. As I'm making my choice, Howard, I'm watching the Nets-Cavs on Monday night. And Darius Garland is just taking on James Harden, Kyrie Irving, like, by himself. Like, that guy, straight stud. Fred VanVleet, too. Like, having another terrific season in Toronto. He was in the mix for me. Ultimately, I kind of went back to the old reliable, and that was James Harden. I mean, the numbers are what they are. The Nets are winning despite, you know, kind of a lot of dysfunction around their team, whether it's through COVID, injuries, Kyrie stuff. Harden leads the league in assists as we record this podcast. So I shaded towards James Harden on that one. So my starting backcourt is James Harden and DeMar DeRozan.
So for the second spot, a lot of the same names, obviously. We're all looking at the same people. I at least considered Garland. I took a look at Jaylen Brown. I took a look at LaMelo Ball. I took a look at Fred VanVleet, Bradley Beal. Took a glance at Middleton and Holiday too. You know, just, you know, the Bucks are that good, and those guys are veterans and former All-Stars who deserve that consideration. So I looked at whatever it was, like 8, 10 guys, something like that. Where I am right now, if the first guard is between the two Bulls, LaVine and DeRozan, the second guard to me is coming down to James Harden and Trae Young. Both of them started the season kind of struggling a bit with the new officiating emphases and not getting to the line as much and not being able to draw the fouls. They've both kind of evened out, and they've both got really robust numbers right now. I'm not one, Chris, who thinks like we should always pick All-Stars based just on wins and losses. So like MVP to me, always the wins always matter. All-Star and some of the other awards or other honors, it's more of a tiebreaker sometimes, because I think All-Star is more about just your individual excellence. Also, I might even argue it's not, like, for the most part, it's not even about defense, right? Like, All-Star games are really about, like, who are the best offensive guys in the league, and occasionally you get a Rudy Gobert or a Draymond Green or somebody whose calling card is defense, especially if they're a big man. But, like, you know, defense-first guys aren't making All-Star teams, so I'm not really worried about lack of defense, because this game's about scoring. So I'm leaning James Harden over Trae Young, in which case you and I would agree on that slot. The argument for Harden, he's got, so he, it really comes down to wins at this point. Harden has more rebounds per game and more wins. They are comparable in scoring and they're comparable in assists. And like Trey's scoring more, but Trey's shooting a lot more. And Trey's got a better shooting percentage from two and three and the foul line. So if I'm going on efficiency, which I've used in other arguments, I think Trae actually has a slightly stronger argument than Harden, other than the fact that Harden is nearly averaging a triple-double and he's on a better team. So that's where I'm at there. I'm leaning Harden. I think maybe that's kind of the because he is the old standby. And the Hawks have been a disaster. And that's the thing. Like, it's not just that the Hawks have struggled a little. It's that they're way underachieving, and it's kind of hard to overlook that right now.
Yeah, and not that Harden is some kind of defensive stopper, but Trae Young and the rest of the Hawks have been just awful defensively this
year.
Yeah,
and Harden fights, especially when he's he'll guards big men in the post, right? Like he's not going to stop a speedy guard in front of him in space, but Harden competes in other areas defensively.
I was at the Hawks-Lakers game about a week and a half ago, and that was not good. That was not good what I saw from Trae Young and the Atlanta defense. Excellent offensively. Like, they have mastered the dribble-drive lob. Like, they've figured out, like, John Collins gets his buckets that way. Clint Capella gets buckets that way. Everybody gets buckets that way. Trae is so good at getting into the paint and creating offense for himself and others. But you go to the other end of the floor, and they just can't stop anybody. So if it's close, and it is, that's why I lean towards James Harden. All right, Western Conference front court.
How about this? Can we go out of the five? How many locks do you have? Let's start there.
Out of the five, I have three locks.
Okay. Yes. I also have three locks with a fourth who's a virtual lock.
Okay,
and then I've got one forward spot. I've got one front court spot that I'm still debating. So let's maybe go through our locks first here.
Okay, let's go through the locks. My locks in the Western Conference are LeBron James.
Yes.
Nikola Jokic.
Yes.
And Steph Curry.
Yes. Absolute.
Those three
absolute
locked
locks.
In.
Yes.
Absolutely. So that leaves two slots kind of up for grabs there. So the Western Conference front court slot, the third one, that's not easy right there. I spent a lot of time over the last couple of days kind of diving into the numbers and, you know, kind of talking to coaches about different intangibles there, because there are several qualified candidates. You want to look offensively. Karl Anthony Towns is having another fantastic offensive season. He's actually defending a lot better than I've seen him defend in years past. At least he's trying more, which is something you can always be said about Towns. Now, DeAndre Ayton hasn't played a lot of games. I think it's like 29 right now, but his offense has bumped up a little bit, and he continues to anchor a top three defense in the NBA. Anthony Davis, again, games played is an issue. You know,
no. He's not even on the board. He's not even on the board, Chris. He's been out too long.
Well, yeah, but like he had, if I'm considering Ayton, I'm considering Davis because they're right around the same number of games right now. So yeah. Ayton's just out there playing and Davis is out for the next whatever. If Davis had been healthy, even with that horrifyingly bad three-point shooting percentage, I probably would have leaned towards him, but he hasn't played enough games, not healthy. Team's not very good. I got cooked on Monday night on Twitter for kind of stream of consciousness tweeting where I tweeted out, I'm actually considering Andrew Wiggins for a starting slot in the All-Star game. Like, people assumed that I was voting for him. I didn't say that. I said I was considering, which at that time, I'm kind of looking at his numbers and looking at his overall impact. I'm like, huh, all right, well, Golden State's really good. Andrew Wiggins is a big reason why. Like, he's averaging like 18 points per game. He's shooting 42% from three. And if you look at his defensive rating, he's in the top 10 overall in defensive rating. So, like, those are pretty good numbers to look at. People clap back and say, well, he's put up the same numbers as last year. No. The three-point shooting is better than any other year he's ever had, and the defense has been better than any year that he's had. So, at 26 years old, and I can't friggin' believe that Andrew Wiggins is only 26. Like, that feels like he's been in the league forever. But at 26 years old, Wiggins is really putting his game together. Steve Kerr was not just paying lip service to Andrew Wiggins when he said a couple of weeks ago, that guy is an all-star. You look at the numbers and you can make a strong case for an all-star. Not as strong as a starter, but a strong case as an all-star. My third front court slot went to Rudy Gobert, which gives me two centers in that front court. And our good friends over at Jazz PR sent me a whole bunch of Rudy's accolades, and he's got a lot of them this season, Howard. He is second in the NBA in plus-minus. He ranks in the top three in win shares, defensive win shares, offensive rating. He leads the league in screen assists and is tracking right now.
Stop it with
you the
screen assists.
Assist. Come on, you love the screen assists. Come on, no, good screens are valuable. They're valuable things. He is tracking right now to become the only player in NBA history to average 15 points, 15 rebounds while shooting better than 70% from the floor. And like, if you're looking for that kind of value argument, he was out for five games. For
they
Utah.
Sucked.
And they were 1-4. They were 1-4. And Howard, they had the worst defensive rating in the NBA during that stretch. They were 30th in the league in defensive rating. That's a team that I think it was Quinn Snyder or somebody in the Jazz front office when I was writing about them last year said to me, like, Rudy is by himself a top 10 defense. And that, like, that stretch is kind of evidence of that. With Rudy Gobert, they're like a top five-ish defense. Without him, at least for six games or four, five games, whatever it was, they are bad, like really bad on the defensive end. So while it's going to be weird, at least on my ballot, to see two centers out there on the floor, I went with the big Frenchman.
I got to admit, Chris, as though we are now, whatever, 7-8 years into this, you know, front court, back court ballot, instead of it being two guards, two forwards, and a center, it certainly gives us the freedom to go three forwards, two centers and a forward, three centers if we wanted to, I suppose. Aesthetically and just, I guess, philosophically, pragmatically, you wouldn't start Jokic and Gobert together in any universe. And of course, this became a big debate last year with the whole Embiid versus Jokic thing, because we had it was the All-NBA discussion, and that became a big fight. And some people with the Sixers weren't very happy about the idea that Embiid would slip to second team, and why not? Why couldn't he be, you know, anyway, whatever. Because I think everybody had multiple positional eligibility. I don't know if I really want two centers on my ballot. I'm just not sure. This is not to be overly traditionalist. We are in a positionless age, but certain guys are not positionless. Rudy Gobert is just a center. He's not anything else. He's a really amazingly great defensive center who scores occasionally and apparently sets something called a screen assist occasionally.
You're a screen assist hater is what you are.
Nikola Jokic, incredibly phenomenally gifted player who plays like a guard, but we know he's a center. He's a point center. But he's a center. You're not lining him up opposite anybody else's guards or forwards defensively. And I don't want to get too caught up in that old definition of the you are what you guard. That's a little too limited also in today's NBA. But I'm sorry. These are two guys who are prototypical centers. Draymond Green, forward, center, both, yes. Rudy Gobert, Nikola Jokic are centers. And that's it. So I'm not sure. Right now, my debate is between Draymond Green and Gobert for that third front court spot after Jokic and LeBron James. And those two guys are locks, as we discussed. Draymond's having an incredible season defensively. He's out right now. We don't know when he'll be back. You know, he's another guy who, if he does make it, might get subbed out if he's not healthy in time. But Draymond's had a fantastic year and is a big part of this Warriors revival and a big part of the reason why, as you were noting with Wiggins, why they're contenders again. It's not just Steph, whose efficiency is actually, as everybody keeps noting, has declined quite a bit in the last few weeks. Steph is still playing at an all-star level, no question. Steph is still, I think, in the MVP discussion. But he is not single-handedly carrying them. Wiggins and Draymond Green have been hugely important for them. And in Draymond's case, he's, you know, as we know, year in, year out, the guy's also their lead playmaker. I mean, Steph does a lot with the ball in his hands, but Draymond Green is in a lot of ways the hub of that offense. He makes life easier for everybody with his playmaking.
7.5 assists this season.
And
he is doing that.
And so I'm a little tossed up between Draymond and Gobert. I considered some of the others that you mentioned, and I haven't ruled these guys out yet necessarily, but Karl-Anthony Towns is putting up big numbers. You know, Brandon Ingram, Paul George, although he's hurt. That's the other thing. So I did make, real quick, on the list of guys who made it in 2021 but were out, presumably making our lives a little easier because there's fewer names to consider, but Kawhi Leonard, all-star last year, he's out. Anthony Davis, as far as I'm concerned, is off the board. He's missed too much time. Zion Williamson, you know, obviously same deal because he's missed all of it. And Dame Lillard with the backcourt was another one who we would normally be debating right now. And we didn't have to worry about
it. I assume like me, like Paul George's 26 games kind of pushed him out of
the mix. He's off the board. Yeah. For me, the games played thing, you know, even in a COVID season, there's a minimum somewhere in there, and Paul George is off the board for me.
So, like, I looked at Draymond too, and let's just be clear on this. Draymond, his value goes so far beyond numbers. He is a high-level playmaker, but his versatility defensively, how he backstops that defense with his communication, these are all things that can't be measured. Like, he is a beyond-the-numbers type of player. All that being said, I mean, he's averaging less than 8 points a game. He's shooting like 28% from three. Not to say he shouldn't be an all-star. Probably should. But a starter, I couldn't go there. Yeah. Not with that,
which is fair,
type of offensive output.
Takes
nothing away from what he does, but I'm looking at starter, and Gobert's numbers just blow me away at this point. And, like, look, we've seen the way, you know, Steph has slipped when Draymond's been out. The team has slipped with Draymond out. But, as we just talked about, Utah Jazz effectively cratered with Rudy Gobert out of the lineup.
Yeah.
And that, to me, shows a value that... In addition to having the numbers, Gobert's value clearly goes beyond the numbers as well.
Yes. He's absolutely worthy. If I don't pick him, it's not going to be because he didn't have the requisite credentials for it. It'll be probably because I'm having real trouble putting two centers on the ballot and maybe wanting to defy the NBA's structure there a little bit. But I may ultimately go with Gobert. I may ultimately go with Karl-Anthony Towns for all I know. I mean, look, people can knock Towns for his lack of defense. He's kind of the inverse of Rudy Gobert in a lot of ways, but he's incredibly talented. He's put up great numbers. The Timberwolves are having a much better season.
His defensive rating is up too. Like, it's still not great, yeah, but it's up from what it's been in years past.
And listen, I mean, look, I respect the fact that, you know, defense is part of this game, and it is part of being a great player or even being a good player and for a lot of guys. This game, and especially the All-Star game in this league, it's about scoring. It's about offense. And to the extent that fans want to see something fun, even though I think the All-Star game is rarely entertaining, you would rather see Karl Anthony Towns than Rudy Gobert. I'm not saying that that is the ultimate the ultimate gauge for how you should do this exercise. Everybody will do it their own way. And it's not just about being entertaining. There are plenty of entertaining players who were not worthy, but what Karl Anthony Towns does is far more fun to watch. That's not a knock. That's just reality. Everybody loves scoring.
Yeah. All right. So you're still deciding on that pick. You have until, I believe, what, Saturday?
To make Saturday night.
Saturday night?
I will be one of the last to file my ballot because I always am.
I'm Team Rudy right now for that slot. Now, this second backcourt spot was equally as tough. There's no question about it. It's a very good field. It includes Chris Paul, Donovan Mitchell. Luka Doncic has not been Luka Doncic, but
he's in the discussion.
He's in the discussion, yeah. Anthony Edwards, I think, has been great this season.
Shai
Gilgeous-Alexander, quietly in Oklahoma City, maybe not so quietly. He's putting up some big numbers down there. So those guys, among others, were in the mix. But when I was making my choice, Howard, it came down to Devin Booker and Ja Morant. And statistically, the numbers are really close. Both guys are averaging right now right around 24 points per game. Morant is the better playmaker. He's averaging close to 7 assists per game. Devin Booker, he's shooting above 40% from three for the first time in his career, so that's a step forward for him. You look at streaks, like Booker was a monster during that 16-0 November that the Suns had. Morant, during this recent 11-game winning streak, he was a beast during that stretch. So I had to look at those two guys. And again, this is another one that was kind of a coin toss to me. But I went with Booker, and I mean, I did it for almost no other reason than the best team in the NBA kind of has to have a starter, doesn't it? Like, the Suns have the best record in the league right now. Granted, they are very talented. You have three all-star candidates on that team in Booker, Chris Paul, and DeAndre Ayton. I think Booker is the most all-star worthy of the bunch, and I got to have a representative of that team in the starting lineup. So in what was probably the closest call on my ballot, I went with Devin Booker. How do you see that second guard spot?
Yeah, this is brutal. I don't think you've even mentioned DeJounte Murray, who's another one.
Sorry, you're right. I left him out of my discussion.
So I thought about him as well, thought about Anthony Edwards, thought about...
DeJounte Murray, just a quick note on DeJounte Murray. Yeah. Like, he's... Because I did look at him. He leads like the Spurs in like seven categories, whatever it is. Like he's
wild.
I mean, he's putting up huge numbers for that team. They're not very good, and that's
He's flirting with averaging a triple double. He's at like 19, 9, and 8. He's shooting below 500 on his effective field goal percentage, which is not great. But that's what happens when you're one of the only scoring options on a bad team. Like your efficiency often suffers as a result. There's too much on him. Thought about Chris Paul, by the way, as well, but I just think at this stage of his career, like Chris Paul, he's going to get in as a reserve and should. There's too many guys putting up too big a numbers to pick him ahead of the Booker, Mitchell, Luka, Ja Morant group. So I'm leaning right now Ja Morant. And am I being influenced by the just absolute nightly assault on our senses by all of his spectacular plays, whether it's the dunks or the, like, I'm flying through the air like Superman blocks that I had to replay 50 times in a row while my daughter sat next to me laughing. Laughing at me watching it, but also laughing at she can't believe what she's seeing either. And the fact that the Grizzlies have made this major leap as well, at this stage, like the Grizzlies, like, look, they're a top three, top four team in the West. You know, just as you're saying, like, shouldn't the best team in the league, and it's a higher standard, obviously, when you're talking about the Suns, shouldn't they have a starter? What the Grizzlies are doing right now, not just that they've made a major leap, but they haven't just break into the playoff field. We're having the discussion right now quietly of, should we consider the Grizzlies a contender in the West? Like, is it too soon? Like, and most of that is, yes, it's too soon, but they forced their way into the conversation because no one's running away with it. And the Suns and Warriors, as good as they are not overwhelmingly dominant. And the Grizzlies are really tough. And everything they are is symbolized, is embodied by Ja Morant. And numbers-wise, he's got it. He qualifies. So I started looking, drilling down, like, where does he beat some of these other guys? Well, he's got it over Anthony Edwards on assists and free throw attempts. He beats Mitchell and Booker on assists and rebounds and free throw attempts. You know, some of these guys, Edwards, DeJounte Murray, SGA, those guys are all on losing teams, so it's a little easier to push them to the side. Luka has played the fewest games of all these guys, and the Mavs have struggled quite a bit, although they've, you know, rebounded recently. His effective field goal percentage is way down, and so I think that's a reason to maybe pass over Luka this time. Again, he'll be in as a reserve, there's no question, but the bar has to be higher for the starters. Right now, I'm leaning Ja Morant over the rest of that group.
Yeah, I can't argue with Ja Morant. You know, when I was initially thinking about it, actually, you know, I screwed this up. Shout out to our editor, Jarrell Harris, who cleaned up my column at the end, because I picked Ja Morant at one point, then rewrote it, then had to rewrite it again because I kept going back and forth between these two guys. My final copy was like a some sort of combination of both picks at that point. So he had to double check with me on that one.
So you put five guards on your final ballot, which
more or less, yeah. Like,
I don't think Ernst and Young is not going to allow you to do that on the official ballot.
No, they're not going to do that. But I reflexively leaned towards Morant at the beginning because, you know, I felt like there was like a recency bias to it, like how well the Grizzlies have played and all the spectacular things that Morant has done, his dunks, that block on Avery Bradley, like he's been everywhere. But then I kind of went back and looked at all of Devin Booker's stuff, looked at the way he started the season, which counts, like November counts as much as January does. excuse me. And I just leaned towards him. But I have no problem, Howard, with going either way.
I just went back to my player comparison finder on stathead.com, which is part of Basketball Reference, a phenomenal service. I encourage you all to subscribe to the Stathead part of it because you can do all these fun searches. Just drilling down to Ja Morant and Devin Booker, I mean, it is really close. Morant's averaging 24.4 points, Booker 23.9. So very little separating them there. Morant higher assists because he's not playing with Chris Paul, right? So Morant's averaging 6.8 assists to 4.4 for Booker. Morant's 5.8 rebounds a game to 5.3 for Booker. Morant's shooting better from 52% to 46%, which is substantial. But Booker's by far the better three-point shooter, 40% to 35%. And then, you know, they're both getting to the line, Morant a little bit more, 6.2 to 4.9. So, like, it starts to become eye of the beholder stuff, just a personal preference thing almost. But I think Morant, like, if you were just counting categories, Morant, I think, maybe beats him in more categories. But it's not by leaps and bounds. And so I think the totality of what Morant has done for the Grizzlies and where they are and the leap they've made is hard to overlook right now. But, you know, Booker's been doing that for the Suns for a while, and he gets a little overlooked because we put so much credit on Chris Paul for being that linchpin who finally put them over the top, much the way that we're talking about DeRozan instead of LaVine sometimes with the Bulls.
Look, if Morant gets the start, you won't hear me complain at all. Like I said, it was a complete coin flip in a way at the end of that ballot. All right, Howard, get your ballot in. Don't get Mark Broussard angry at you. Don't have him sending you emails.
He knows I'm last. He knows I'm going to be pushing it right up to the last minute. That's my
11th
thing.
Hour Beck. That's what it is. But we will also do the All-Star reserves in a couple of weeks when it comes time for those to be announced. But for now, those are our choices. Howard, good stuff, man. We'll do it again next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.